Jim strode out through the archway and down the hill towards the paddock at the edge of the lagoon. As the track emerged from the trees, he put two fingers into his mouth and whistled. The stallion was a little separated from the rest of the herd, grazing on the green grass at the edge of the water. He threw up his head at the sound, and the blaze on his forehead shone like a diadem in the sunlight. He arched his neck, flared his wide Arabian nostrils, and stared across at Jim with luminous eyes. Jim whistled again. "Come, Drumfire," he called. "Come to me." Drumfire glided from a standstill into a full gallop in a few strides. For such a large animal, he moved with the grace of an antelope. Just watching him, Jim felt his black mood begin to evaporate. The animal's coat gleamed like oiled mahogany, and his mane streamed out over his back like a war banner. His steel-shod hoofs tore chunks out of the green turf with the thunder of rapid fire from a massed battery of cannon, the sound for which Jim had named him. Riding against the burghers of the colony and the officers of the cavalry regiment, Jim and Drumfire had won the governor's gold plate last Christmas Day. In doing so, Drumfire had proved he was the fastest horse in Africa, and Jim had spurned an offer of 2,000 guilders for him from Colonel Stephanus Kaiser, the commander of the garrison. Horse and rider had won honour but no friends that day. Drumfire swept down the track, running straight at Jim. He loved to try and make his master flinch. Jim stood his ground, and at the very last instant Drumfire swerved so close that the wind of his passing ruffled Jim's hair. Then he came to a dead stop on braced front legs, nodding and neighing wildly. "You great showman," Jim told him. "Behave yourself." Suddenly docile as a kitten, Drumfire came back and nuzzled his chest, snuffling at the pockets of his coat until he smelt the slice of plum cake. "Cupboard love," Jim told him firmly. Drumfire pushed him with his forehead, gently at first, but then so demandingly that Jim was lifted off his feet. "You don't deserve it, but..." Jim relented and held out the cake. Drumfire drooled into his open palm as he picked up every last crumb with the velvet lips. Jim wiped his hand on the shining neck, then laid one hand on the horse's withers and leapt lightly onto his back. At the touch of his heels, Drumfire glided again into that miraculous stride, and the wind whipped tears from the corners of Jim's eyes. They raced along the edge of the lagoon, but when Jim touched him behind the shoulder with his toe, the stallion did not hesitate. He turned and plunged into the shallows, startling a shoal of mullet into brief flight like a handful of spinning silver guilders across the green surface. Abruptly, Drumfire was into the deep, and Jim slipped into the water beside him as he swam. He grasped a handful of the long mane and let the stallion tow him along. Swimming was another of Drumfire's great joys, and the horse gave loud grunts of pleasure. As soon as he felt the bottom of the far shore under the horse's hooves, Jim slid onto his back again, and they burst out onto the beach at full stride. Jim turned him down towards the seashore, and they crossed the high dunes, leaving deep hoof prints in the white sand, and went down the other side to where the surf crashed onto the beach. Without check, Drumfire galloped along the edge of the water, running first on the hard wet sand, then belly deep through salt water as the waves came ashore. At last Jim slowed him to a walk. The stallion had galloped away his black mood, his anger and guilt left on the wind. He jumped up and stretched to his full height on Drumfire's back, and the horse adjusted his gait smoothly to help him balance. This was just one of the tricks they had taught each other. Standing high, Jim gazed out over the bay. The mule had swung on her anchor so that she lay broadside to the beach. From this distance she looked as honest and respectable as a burgher's goodwife, giving no outward sign of the horrors hidden within her drab hull. "Wind's changed," Jim told his horse, who cocked an ear back to listen to his voice. "It'll blow up a hell of a storm in the next few days." He imagined the conditions below the decks of the convict ship, if she was still anchored in the bay, which was open to the west when it came. His black mood was returning. He dropped back astride Drumfire and rode on at a more sedate pace towards the castle. By the time they arrived below the massive stone walls, his clothing had dried, although his felskun boots made of kudu skin, was still damp. Captain Hugo van Hoogen, the quartermaster of the garrison, was in his office beside the main powder magazine. He gave Jim a friendly welcome, then offered him a pipe of Turkish tobacco and a cup of Arabian coffee. Jim refused the pipe, but drank the dark, bitter brew with relish. His aunt Yasmini had introduced them all to it. Jim and the quartermaster were old accomplices. It was accepted between them that Jim was the unofficial go-between of the Courtney family. If Hugo signed a license stating that the company was unable to supply provisions or stores to any ship in the bay, then the private chandler designated in the document was allowed to make good the shortfall. Hugo was also an avid fisherman, and Jim related the saga of the Steenbras to a chorus from Hugo of Ach Nierman and Dis nie waar nie, it's not true. When Jim shook hands with him and took his leave, he had in his pocket a blank license to trade in the name of Courtney Brothers Trading Company. "I'll come and drink coffee with you again on Saturday," Jim winked. Hugo nodded genially. "You will be more than welcome, my young friend." From long experience he knew that he could trust Jim to bring his commission in a little purse of gold and silver coin. Back in the stables on High Wheel, Jim rubbed Drumfire down, rather than letting one of the grooms do the job, then left him with a manger of crushed corn, over which he had dribbled molasses. Drumfire had a sweet tooth. The fields and orchards behind the stables were filled with freed slaves, gathering in the fresh produce destined for the mew. Most of the bushel baskets were already filled with potatoes and apples, pumpkins and turnips. His father and Mansur were supervising the harvest. Jim left them to it, and went down to the slaughterhouse. In the cavernous cool room, with its thick windowless walls, dozens of freshly slaughtered sheep carcasses hung from hooks in the ceiling. Jim drew the knife from the sheath on his belt, and whipped the blade with practiced strokes across the whetstone as he went to join his Uncle Dorian. To prepare all the produce they needed to supply to the ship, everyone on the estate had to help with the work. Freed slaves dragged in fat-tailed Persian sheep from the holding pen, held them down and pulled back their heads to expose the throats to the stroke of the knife. Other willing hands lifted the dead animals onto the hooks and stripped off the bloody fleeces. Weeks ago, Carl Otto, the estate butcher, had filled his smoke room with hams and sausages for just such an opportunity. In the kitchens, all the women, from eldest to youngest, were helping Sarah and Yasmini to bottle fruit and pickle vegetables. Despite their best efforts, it was late in the afternoon before the convoy of mule carts was fully loaded and had set off down to the beach. The transfer of the provisions from the carts to the beached bumboats took most of the rest of the night, and it was almost dawn before they were loaded. Despite Jim's misgivings, the wind had not increased in strength, and the sea and surf were manageable as the mule teams dragged the heavily laden boats down the sand. The first glimmer of dawn was in the eastern sky by the time the little convoy was on its way. Jim was at the tiller in the leading boat, and Mansur was on the stroke oar. "What have you got in the bag, Jim?" he asked between strokes. "Ask no questions and you'll hear no lies." Jim glanced down at the waterproof canvas bag that lay between his feet. He kept his voice low so that his father did not overhear. Luckily, Tom Courtney, who stood in the bows, had fired so many heavy muskets in his long career as a hunter that his hearing was dull. "Is it a gift for a sweetheart?" Mansur grinned slyly in the darkness. But Jim ignored him. That arrow was too near the bullseye for comfort. Jim had carefully packed into the bag a bundle of salted, sun-dried venison, the ubiquitous biltong of the Cape Boers, 10 pounds of hard ship's biscuit wrapped in a cloth, a folding knife and a triangular bladed file that he had pilfered from the estate workshop, a tortoise-shell comb which belonged to his mother, and a letter written on a single sheet of paper in Dutch. They came up to the mew, and Tom Courtney hailed her in a bull bellow. "Longboat with supplies! Permission to hook on!" There was an answering shout from the ship, and they rowed in, bumping lightly against the tall hull.